This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
When I was about 12 years old, I embarked on my bi-yearly pilgrimage to visit my beloved grandparents, who resided in upstate New York. I cherished these visits and yearned for more time with them. Their home was nestled in a region that has since undergone development. But back then, it was a quaint enclave comprising just a few houses scattered amidst islands of woods. Between these woods, vast farmlands stretched as far as the eye could see. The local wildlife was diverse, a tapestry that included deer, black bears, porcupines, and a medley of other creatures. I was well acquainted with these animals, encountering them on a weekly basis, and there was no mistaking them for what I was about to witness on that fateful day. On this particular visit, I found myself with my cousins, and together we embarked on an adventure to an old willow tree that we had transformed into a makeshift treehouse. Our playful escapades were punctuated by the anticipation of Thanksgiving dinner, which lay ahead. Armed with a pair of binoculars, we played lookout, scanning the surroundings for any intruders who might dare to approach our beloved willow tree. The older members of our group didn't take this sentinel duty too seriously. After all, we were just kids having fun. Nevertheless, we kept a vigilant watch, ensuring our sanctuary remained free from unwanted guests. It was during this innocent game that I saw something I hadn't been actively searching for. It was a creature, standing at a mere 4 feet in height, with a humanoid form. At first, I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought perhaps it was a figment of my imagination, so before sharing my discovery with anyone else, I asked for the binoculars. I peered through them, expecting to see a cluster of leaves or a tree limb, but what I saw defied explanation. It was a creature that I could only describe as a bizarre amalgamation of a werewolf, a dog, and a man, a corgi-like creature. As I continued to observe it through the binoculars, I noticed details that sent shivers down my spine. The creature was less than 25 feet away from our vantage point. Its body was covered in fur, and beneath it, I could discern well-defined muscles. The creature's chest rose and fell with each breath, a rhythm that appeared both natural and predatory. Its mouth was agape, revealing a set of menacing teeth that protruded ominously. Still, I grappled with disbelief, thinking that fear was clouding my judgment. Seeking confirmation, I turned to my oldest cousin, who also peered through the binoculars. His confirmation sent a chill through me. We decided not to disclose our discovery to our younger cousins, fearing they would panic and flee. We remained frozen in our treehouse, not daring to move, while the creature fixed its gaze upon us. Time seemed to stretch on endlessly as we maintained our silent vigil. The sun began its descent in the sky, casting an eerie light over the scene. Finally, the spell was broken by the sound of my grandmother's voice calling us for dinner. "Boys, time for dinner," she called out. We sat there, torn between the safety of the treehouse and the warmth of our grandmother's home. Eventually, we realized that the presence of an adult offered us an opportunity to escape. We all silently agreed that it was time to make a run for it, not because of dinner, but because an adult was present. I mustered the courage to announce, "All right, everyone, run for the front porch." In unison, we dashed for safety, making it inside the house. My cousin, who had also witnessed the creature, was deeply disturbed by the encounter. He hardly ate anything during Thanksgiving dinner, his mind preoccupied with the enigmatic being we had seen. We were safe inside, but our fear was far from over. As we sat at the table, my grandmother inquired about the whereabouts of her binoculars. It was then that we realized just how terrified we were. We had left them out there, exposed to whatever entity had been watching us. To this day, I remain haunted by the memory of that day, uncertain if it was a product of fear-driven imagination or if I had truly glimpsed some adolescent dogman lurking in the woods. My name is Ryan, and I live in a pretty rural area of Maryland. My life is a mix of crazy and full of insane and scary stories, many of which I hope to share on this channel. I've always harbored a deep desire to be a park ranger, a profession that aligns perfectly with my love for nature, fishing, and traditional bow hunting. But I also have a very indoor side to me, and I thoroughly enjoy playing video games with my friends. Now let me take you back to the summer of 2019. It was a hot and humid day, and I lived not too far from a large patch of woods near a rather substantial creek. My younger brother and I frequented this place during the summer months to trap minnows and crawfish, and just to have some good old-fashioned outdoor fun. However, on that particular day, I felt an overwhelming sense of unease when my brother asked if I wanted to go to the creek with him. You know that gut instinct when something just doesn't feel right, even if you can't put your finger on it. That's the feeling I had at that very moment. But against my better judgment, I brushed it off and agreed to go with him. I grabbed my trusty leather travel bag, my micro fishing pole, our house keys, two crawfish traps, a fixed blade knife, bug spray, and some hand wipes to keep the muck off our fingers. As I was about to leave my room, something compelled me to grab my longbow, an intricately handcrafted piece that had cost me a small fortune. It was surprisingly sturdy, built for the wilderness, and, although I initially hesitated, that nagging gut feeling pushed me to take it with me. My brother noticed my longbow as I stepped outside, and he asked if I needed any broadhead arrows. I assured him that I was just practicing and told him not to worry. I could see the unease in his eyes, but I loved my brother dearly and wanted to reassure him. I promised to be careful, and even offered to let him have a go at shooting it, which seemed to put his mind at ease. We made our way up the dirt path toward the woods, a not-so-long walk where you could always see the forest and hear the rustling of leaves and the chirping of birds. These sounds usually provided comfort, but halfway to our usual spot, my brother pointed out that it had become eerily silent. I took a moment to listen, and he was right. There wasn't a single sound, just a deafening silence that seemed to stretch throughout the forest. My gut feeling was now turning into a confirmed sensation of unease, and my brother looked increasingly nervous. My longbow hung over my shoulder, offering some reassurance, and my brother, eager about the prospect of shooting it, asked me how many arrows I had brought. I took this opportunity to fabricate a story about having the perfect spot to shoot while setting up the crawfish traps. We eventually reached the creek, and I instructed my brother to set up the traps, handing him the crawfish traps and some raw chicken I had packed. However, I used this time to survey the area. Thick foliage surrounded us on all sides, and there was no sign that anyone had been here in a very long time. Then I heard a noise to my left, a sound like a massive branch snapping in two. My attention snapped away from the creek, and I scanned the area, but there was nothing there. At this point, fear was beginning to creep in, and I pulled out an arrow, knocking it on the string of my bow. The woods seemed oddly dark, as if it were already evening, despite it being only 12:30 in the afternoon on a warm, sunny summer day. My hands began to tremble, and I was about to call out to my brother when I saw it. At first, it appeared like a massive black and brown mask that blocked out the sun. But as I focused, I realized it was fur, and what I was staring at seemed to be a creature standing on two legs, resembling a distorted mix between a dog and a wolf. Its eyes were bright green, almost hypnotic, and I could make out every terrifying feature clearly. It stood at an intimidating 6 feet 10 inches tall, with a snout filled with dripping, saliva-covered teeth. Its mouth was partially open, revealing a large tongue covered in drool, as if it viewed me as its next meal. The creature was covered in dense brown fur, matted and seemingly impenetrable. It had claws, but its paws resembled more of human hands than the typical paws of a dog. Its ears were perked up, as if it were listening intently to the sound of my heart pounding in fear. I was paralyzed with terror, unable to move. It felt as if those bright green eyes were drawing me in. The creature's very presence was surreal, and I couldn't comprehend what I was witnessing. My bow provided some comfort, but I was still frozen in fear. My brother interrupted the standoff by yelling that he had found a strange pile of bones in a small cave near the creek on the other side. My heart sank as the realization struck me that this beast was real, and if I didn't get out of there, my brother and I might become the next pile of bones. In a panic, I shouted for my brother to grab my bag, and we'd leave the traps behind, returning for them later. He called up, asking if everything was okay, and I lied, saying yes, but that a friend had invited us over for a sleepover, and he was coming to pick us up. My brother grabbed the bag and sprinted up the hill. My eyes had momentarily drifted away from the creature when I looked up, but it had vanished. I ran after my brother, and together we dashed out of the woods. All the while, I could hear something rustling in the foliage to my left, and the fear that the creature might be following us consumed me. We made it out of the woods in record time. I quickly texted my friend Dave, asking if I could come over. He agreed and inquired if I was all right. I told him that I was, but that I'd explain everything later. Dave picked us up at a local gas station, and as soon as my brother hopped out of the car, I launched into the terrifying tale. To my surprise, Dave didn't laugh or dismiss my story as a mere fabrication. Instead, he looked at me seriously and shared that his father had experienced the exact same thing 13 years ago. I was in shock, but also relieved that someone believed me. We grabbed some burgers, went to Dave's place, and while watching a movie, we started researching the strange creatures we had encountered. It turns out there's a creature known as Dogman. As we delved deeper on YouTube, I found your channel, Just Creepy, and decided to share my harrowing experience in the hope of finding answers. And just to add, those crawfish traps, I never went back to retrieve them. I always thought that moving to a new place was supposed to be an adventure, something out of a storybook where every corner held a promise of excitement. But as our car rolled to a stop in front of the old house in Louisiana, all I felt was a sense of dread. It was nothing like our home in Oregon. I missed the rain already, the way it sang me to sleep, and the green, green world it nourished. I missed Dad. The house loomed in front of us, its walls tired and peeling, like it was trying to shrug off its own skin. Mom said it was a fresh start, but all I could see were the shadows clinging to the eaves. Jamie, my little sister, was asleep with her head against the window, clutching the baseball bat Dad had given her. I guess she was trying to find some comfort in it. "We're here," Mom announced with a forced cheerfulness. Her eyes had that faraway look they got whenever she talked about the future. I wondered if she was seeing the same house I was. As we unloaded our lives from the back seat of the car, I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. The house had a strange echo to it, a hollow sound that made our footsteps seem like intruders. The old wallpaper in the living room twisted in odd shapes. Mom joked it was just the heat warping it, but I wasn't so sure. There was something unsettling about it, like the walls were trying to crawl away. Our first dinner in the new house was a quiet affair. We sat on the floor, cross-legged, eating takeout because the kitchen was still a maze of unpacked boxes. The sun set outside, casting long shadows through the windows. It was a different kind of sunset here, the light harsh and unyielding, unlike the soft dusks back in Oregon. After dinner, Mom suggested we sit on the back porch. The air was thick with the heat and the hum of mosquitoes. The trees at the edge of our backyard stood still as if too tired to dance in the breeze. Jamie and I sat with Mom, watching the sky change colors. It was then I realized that this was home now. The thought made my chest tight. The rustling in the grass made us all turn. A man was walking towards us, his shirt sleeves rolled up past his elbows. He had a friendly smile, but his eyes were like those of a cat, curious and a bit unsettling. "Bill? Hi, come join us," Mom greeted him, her voice a bit too bright. Bill was the man who had sold us the house. He had a Louisiana lilt to his voice that made his words roll like slow-moving water. His eyes lingered on me and Jamie a bit too long for comfort. "Hey there, girlies," he said with a chuckle. That night, as I lay in my new bed, the house creaked and groaned around me. The room felt too big, too empty. The cross hanging between mine and Jamie's bed seemed to watch us. Jamie, brave as ever, kept her eyes on the door until sleep took her. I turned my back to the room, trying to ignore the feeling of eyes on me. Sleep, when it finally came, was restless and filled with dreams of rain and green fields, a world away from the crawling walls of our new home in Louisiana. The sun was already high in the sky when I woke up the next morning, its rays fighting their way through the old lace curtains of our bedroom. Jamie was already up, probably exploring the house or the yard. I lay there for a moment, listening to the unfamiliar sounds of our new home. The creaks and groans of the old house seemed to carry secrets of their own. I wandered into the kitchen, where Mom was humming as she unpacked a box of dishes. She seemed more at ease here, but I couldn't shake off the unease that clung to me like the Louisiana humidity. The house felt like a stranger, one that wasn't particularly happy to have us. "Morning, Kenna," Mom greeted me, her smile a little too bright. "Sleep well?" I just shrugged. How could I tell her that every little noise in the night made my heart race, that I felt eyes on me even when I was alone? Breakfast was a quiet affair. Jamie chattered about the backyard and the woods, her eyes bright with the thrill of new adventures. She was always the brave one, unafraid of the unknown. I wished I could borrow some of her courage. After breakfast, I decided to explore the house. The living room still had boxes stacked in corners, and the old wallpaper seemed to move in the corner of my eye. I knew it was just a trick of the light, but it made my skin crawl. It was in the afternoon when Jamie told me about the dog man. We were sitting in our room, trying to make it feel like ours. Her voice was a whisper, her eyes wide and serious. "I saw him last night," she said, "outside our window. He was watching us." I felt a chill run down my spine. "Jamie, there's no such thing as the dog man." I tried to sound confident, but my voice trembled. Jamie just nodded, but I could tell she didn't believe me. She was convinced of what she saw, and deep down, a part of me feared she might be right. Life in Louisiana was different. The days were hot and long, and the nights brought little relief from the heat. I found myself missing Oregon more than I thought I would. I missed the rain, the cool air, and most of all, Dad. One day, while exploring the neighborhood, I met Jake, a boy about my age who lived a few houses down. He was quiet and had a kind smile. We quickly became friends, often sitting by the river, talking about everything and nothing. He made Louisiana feel a little less foreign, but the nights were still hard. The house seemed to come alive in the dark, its creaks and groans more pronounced. And every night, Jamie would watch the door, her baseball bat clutched tightly in her hands. Then one night, I woke up to find Jamie's hair cut short, jagged and uneven. She was crying, her eyes wide with fear. "He did it," she sobbed. "The dog man." I didn't know what to believe anymore. Fear settled in my stomach like a heavy stone. There was something wrong with this house. Something very wrong, and I was afraid that we were not alone in it. It had been a few weeks since we moved into the house, and every day seemed to bring a new, unsettling experience. Despite my growing unease, I tried to make the best of our situation, spending time with Jake and trying to ignore the creeping dread that filled the house at night. But everything changed the night Jamie disappeared. That evening had started like any other. Mom was working late again, so I made dinner for Jamie and me. We ate in silence, the empty chairs at the table a stark reminder of how much our family had changed since moving to Louisiana. After dinner, Jamie went outside to play. I watched her from the kitchen window, her blonde hair catching the last rays of the sun as she ran towards the woods. I wanted to call out to her, to tell her to stay away from the trees, but I held back. She needed this freedom, even if it scared me. I was washing the dishes when darkness fell. The house seemed to sigh as the light faded, and I felt the familiar knot of fear in my stomach. I called out for Jamie, but there was no response. Panic surged through me as I ran outside, searching the yard and then the edge of the woods. But Jamie was nowhere to be seen. I shouted her name until my throat was raw, the only response the echo of my own voice off the trees. The woods seemed to stare back at me, dark and impenetrable. My mind raced with terrible possibilities. Had she fallen? Had she gotten lost? Or worse, had the dog man? I forced myself to stop thinking about it and went back inside to call Mom. When she arrived, her face was a mask of fear and determination. Together, we combed the woods, calling Jamie's name and trying to ignore the growing sense of dread. As the hours passed with no sign of Jamie, our neighbors began to join the search. Flashlights pierced the darkness, casting eerie shadows among the trees. The local police arrived, their questions a blur as I tried to keep the panic at bay. The search continued throughout the night, but as dawn broke, there was still no sign of Jamie. Mom was inconsolable, her face pale and drawn. I felt numb, the reality of the situation too much to bear. Jamie, my brave little sister, was gone, and I had no idea if we would ever see her again. The days that followed were a blur of police interviews, search parties, and whispered conversations among the neighbors. Rumors began to circulate about the dog man, about other missing children, about the dark history of our house. I tried to shut it all out, focusing instead on the memories of Jamie's laughter, her fearless spirit, her love for adventure. But as each day passed with no news, those memories became a source of pain, a constant reminder of what we had lost. I couldn't eat, couldn't sleep, couldn't escape the feeling that I had failed my sister. I should have protected her, should have been there for her. And now, because of my fear and inaction, she was gone. In the depth of my despair, I made a decision. I would find Jamie, no matter what it took. I would face my fears, confront the dark secrets of our house, and bring my sister home. The thought was terrifying, but it was all I had left, a flicker of hope in the overwhelming darkness. The days after Jamie's disappearance were the longest of my life. The house felt emptier than ever, its silence a constant reminder of her absence. Sleep was elusive, and when it did come, it brought nightmares filled with shadows and unidentifiable whispers. I was exhausted, both physically and emotionally, but I couldn't stop. I had to find my sister. One night, about a week after Jamie vanished, something changed. I was lying in bed, staring at the ceiling, when I heard a faint scratching at the window. My heart raced as I forced myself to look. There, in the moonlight, stood the dog man. His figure was imposing, his presence both terrifying and mesmerizing. His eyes, glowing in the dark, seemed to beckon me. I knew it was crazy, but something inside me urged me to follow him. I slipped out of bed, careful not to wake Mom, and quietly made my way outside. The dog man waited, his gaze never leaving me. As I approached, a sense of calm enveloped me. This creature, this figment of Jamie's stories, was leading me somewhere. I didn't know why, but I trusted him. We walked in silence, the dogman leading me deeper into the woods. The night air was cool, and the forest seemed alive with unseen eyes watching us. But I wasn't afraid. The dogman's presence was comforting in a way I couldn't explain. After what felt like hours, we reached a clearing. The dogman stopped and pointed to the ground. There, partially covered by fallen leaves, was a small, tattered piece of fabric. I recognized it instantly. It was from Jamie's favorite shirt. Tears filled my eyes as I picked it up, a mix of hope and fear coursing through me. The dogman gestured for me to follow him again, and we continued our journey through the woods. Eventually, we reached a house I had never seen before. It was old and run down, its blue paint peeling and windows boarded up. The dogman stopped and pointed towards the house, his gaze intense. I understood. This was where Jamie was, This was the end of our journey. I approached the house, my heart pounding in my chest. Every instinct told me to run, but I couldn't leave without knowing if Jamie was inside. I found a door, and taking a deep breath, I opened it. The inside of the house was dark and musty. I fumbled for a light switch, and when the lights flickered on, the sight before me took my breath away. There, in the corner of the room, was Jamie. She was tied up, but alive. I rushed to her, tears streaming down my face as I untied her. "Jamie, Jamie, you're okay," I sobbed, holding her tightly. Jamie was weak but managed a small smile. "I knew you'd find me," she whispered. We didn't waste any time. I helped Jamie to her feet and we hurried out of the house. As we stepped outside, I turned to thank the dogman, but he was gone, vanished as mysteriously as he had appeared. We made our way back home, the first light of dawn breaking through the trees. Mom was overjoyed to see Jamie, holding her close, as if she would never let go. The police were called, and they quickly swarmed the house we had just escaped from. It turned out to be the home of Bill, the man who had sold us our house. The police found evidence of his crimes, and he was arrested shortly after. He was responsible for Jamie's kidnapping, and, as we later learned, much more. As for the dogman, I never saw him again, but I knew he was real. He had led me to my sister, had guided me through the darkness to bring her home. I didn't know why he had chosen to help us, but I was eternally grateful. Jamie's return brought a sense of relief and joy to our home, but it was bittersweet. We had been through so much, seen the depths of darkness and come out the other side. Our lives would never be the same, but we were together, and that was all that mattered. The days following Jamie's rescue were a whirlwind of emotions and events. Relief and joy at having my sister back clashed with the horror of what had happened. Our house, once a symbol of our new life in Louisiana, now felt tainted, a constant reminder of the nightmare we had endured. The revelation of Bill's crimes sent shockwaves through our small community. The man we had known as a friendly neighbor was unmasked as a monster. It was almost impossible to reconcile the two images. The police investigation revealed the depth of his depravity, and he was swiftly brought to justice. But even with Bill behind bars, a sense of unease lingered. Mom was different after Jamie's return. The strain of the past weeks had taken its toll, and she seemed to age overnight. But there was also a new strength in her, a determination to make things right for us. She was more present, more involved, and I could see her making an effort to rebuild the shattered pieces of our family. As for Jamie, she was quiet. The bubbly, fearless little sister I knew was now more reserved, her smiles fewer and far between. The ordeal had left its mark on her, and I often caught her staring into space, lost in thoughts I couldn't begin to understand. But she was alive, and she was safe. That was all that mattered. In the midst of it all, Dad arrived. Seeing him step out of his car, looking tired and worn, was like a balm to my soul. He enveloped us in his arms, and for the first time in weeks, I felt a sense of safety, of normalcy. We were a family again, broken, but together. The decision to move back to Oregon was unanimous. Louisiana, with its sweltering heat and haunting memories, was no longer home. We needed to start over, to find our way back to the life we had lost. Packing up the house was therapeutic in a way. Each box we filled a step towards our new beginning. Leaving Louisiana was bittersweet. As we drove away, I couldn't help but look back at the woods, half expecting to see the dogman watching us. But there was only the dense greenery, silent and still. I wondered about him, this mysterious guardian who had appeared in our time of need. I would probably never understand why he helped us, but I was grateful. He had saved Jamie, and in doing so, saved all of us. The journey back to Oregon was long, but it gave us time to reflect, to heal. We talked, laughed, and even cried together. It was a cathartic experience, shedding the weight of the past as we moved towards our future. Arriving in Oregon was like coming home. The familiar sights and sounds were comforting, a reminder of simpler times. We had been through a nightmare, but we had emerged stronger. Our bond as a family was unbreakable, forged in the fires of adversity. As I settled into my old room, I realized that this was a new chapter for us. We had faced the darkness and come out into the light. And though the memories of Louisiana would always be with us, they would not define us. We were survivors, and we would move forward, together. The first light of dawn was just breaking over the horizon, as my brother, Mark, and I loaded up the last of our gear into the old Chevy. We'd been planning this hunting trip for months, eager to escape the bustle of Grand Rapids and lose ourselves in the wilderness near the Canadian-Michigan border. There's something about the quiet of the woods, the simplicity of a cabin, that always brought us back to our roots. Mark, 3 years my junior, shared my love for the outdoors, a passion inherited from our father. He had this infectious enthusiasm about him, always the first to rise and the last to call it a night. I was more reserved, preferring the silent contemplation that came with watching a sunrise. We made a good team, balancing each other out. The drive up north was a familiar one. We'd made similar treks with our dad when we were kids, but this was our first time heading to this particular cabin. The roads became narrower, the signs of civilization scarcer, as we ventured further into the wilderness. It was just us, the truck, and a winding road framed by towering pines and occasional glimpses of awaking wildlife. Arriving at the cabin was like stepping into a postcard. Nestled in a clearing surrounded by dense forest, it stood humble yet inviting, with a small porch and a chimney that promised cozy evenings. We quickly unloaded our gear, eager to settle in and start our adventure. The cabin inside was rustic and unpretentious. Wooden floors, a stone fireplace, and a couple of well-used armchairs. It smelled of pine wood and had a comforting, lived-in feel. We spent the rest of the morning unpacking, setting up our gear, and planning our hunting routes. After a light lunch of sandwiches and coffee, we set out for our first hunt. We moved through the forest with practiced ease, attuned to the sounds and movements around us. The hours passed by, marked only by the occasional call of a distant bird or the rustle of leaves underfoot. We didn't talk much. We didn't need to. The silent understanding between us was enough. As the day wore on and our game bags remained light, I couldn't help but feel content. It wasn't just about the hunt. It was about being here, away from the noise, surrounded by nature's grandeur. We headed back to the cabin as the sun began its descent, painting the sky in shades of orange and purple. Tired but fulfilled, we decided against cooking and opted for a quick trip to town for some supplies and a hot meal. "I'll go," I volunteered, eager for a short drive and maybe a chat with some locals. Mark, looking equally weary, agreed to stay behind and freshen up. The drive to town was peaceful, a chance to reflect on the day and enjoy the solitude. The town, a small collection of buildings and a general store, was quiet, the kind of place where everyone knows everyone. The store clerk, a friendly woman in her 50s, chatted amiably as I picked up some groceries and a couple of cold pops. Returning to the cabin, the sky had darkened to a deep blue, the first stars beginning to twinkle. Little did I know, as I turned onto the cabin's road, that the peaceful end to our day was about to be shattered by something inexplicable, something straight out of a nightmare. The drive back from town was quiet, the kind of silence you only find in deep woods after sunset. The darkness was thick, like a blanket thrown over the world, broken only by the narrow beam of my truck's headlights. I was thinking about the simple dinner I'd picked up, how it would hit the spot after a long day in the woods. Mark, my brother, he gets kind of ornery when he's hungry, and I was looking forward to seeing his face light up when I walked in with the food. As I neared the cabin, something felt off. The shadows seemed deeper, the night more oppressive. I've spent enough time in the wilderness to trust my instincts, and right then, they were screaming that something wasn't right. My grip tightened on the steering wheel, the comforting weight of my hunting knife in my boot suddenly very present in my mind. And then I saw it. A figure, large and looming, silhouetted against the dim light of the cabin window. My first thought was Mark, but this figure was too big, too bulky to be him. My heart started to race. A bear, maybe? It wasn't unheard of in these parts. But something about the way it stood, upright on two legs, sent a shiver down my spine. Without thinking, I angled the truck towards the figure, flipping on the high beams. The light hit it full on, and for a moment, time stood still. What I saw in that beam of light was something I'll never forget, something that defied explanation. It wasn't a bear, it was a monster, something out of a child's nightmare. Standing on two legs, over 7 feet tall, it had the body of a man but the features of a wolf. Its coat was a dark, mottled brown, shaggy and wild. Muscles rippled under its fur, its chest broad and heaving. The arms were long, ending in hands, or paws, with vicious claws. Its neck was thick, leading up to a head that was all wolf. Snarling mouth, sharp teeth, and eyes that glowed in the headlights like coals. My mind raced, trying to make sense of what I was seeing. A werewolf? That was the stuff of legends, not the reality of a hunting trip in Michigan. But there it was, in front of me, as real as the truck I was sitting in. The creature turned to face me, and for a moment we locked eyes. There was intelligence there, an anger, a primal fury that seemed directed right at me. I felt my body freeze, a primal fear taking hold. Then, with a snarl that sent ice through my veins, it turned and bounded off into the woods, moving with a speed and agility that seemed impossible for something its size. I sat there for what felt like an eternity, my heart pounding in my chest. Finally, I snapped out of it. Mark was alone in the cabin, possibly unaware of the horror that lurked just outside. My protective instincts kicked in. Slamming the truck into gear, I tore up the driveway, my mind racing with fear and confusion. What the hell had I just seen? And what did it want with us? I slammed the truck to a stop, gravel crunching under the tires, heart pounding in my chest like a frantic drum. The cabin loomed ahead, dark and silent, a stark contrast to the turmoil swirling inside me. Fear gripped me, but it was fear for Mark, alone and unaware of the nightmare that had just unfolded before my eyes. I barely remembered getting out of the truck, my actions driven by adrenaline and the primal need to protect my brother. The night was silent, oppressively so, as if the forest itself was holding its breath. I clutched the maglite like a lifeline, its beam cutting through the darkness as I sprinted to the cabin door, shouting Mark's name. The door flew open, and there he was, looking bewildered and annoyed, his face lit by the warm glow of the cabin's interior. "What the hell, Jake?" he started, but his voice trailed off when he saw my face. He knew me well enough to see that something was seriously wrong. "Something's out there," I gasped out, my breath ragged. "We need to leave, now." I expected resistance, questions, but Mark just nodded, a testament to the years we'd spent relying on each other. We moved quickly, grabbing our rifles and anything else within reach. The weight of the rifle in my hands was a small comfort, but against what I'd seen, I wasn't sure if it would be enough. We burst out of the cabin, the cool night air hitting us like a wave. The forest was a wall of darkness, impenetrable and menacing. Every shadow seemed like it could be hiding a monster, every rustle in the trees a signal of an impending attack. We made a beeline for the truck, our steps heavy and hurried. That's when we heard it. A growl, deep and guttural, resonating through the stillness. It was close, too close, and it sent a shiver down my spine. Mark and I exchanged a glance, a mix of fear and determination in his eyes mirroring my own. We reached the truck, throwing our gear into the back and clambering inside. Mark shone his maglite into the trees, searching for any sign of the beast, but it revealed nothing. The forest had swallowed it up, as if it had never been there at all. I started the truck, the engine roaring to life, shattering the eerie calm. We peeled out of there, the cabin receding into the night behind us. My mind was racing, trying to process what had happened, what we had seen. As we drove, I told Mark everything, the figure at the window, the confrontation in the headlights, the creature's monstrous appearance. He listened in silence, his face a mask of concentration. When I finished, he didn't speak for a long time. Finally, he said, "I think we saw a werewolf, Jake." I wanted to laugh, to dismiss it as impossible, but the image of the beast was burned into my mind, undeniable and terrifying. We drove back to town in silence, the night pressing in around us, a sense of unease lingering in the air. What had we encountered? Was it really the stuff of legend, a creature out of a fairy tale? Or was it something else, something unexplained and equally terrifying? One thing was for sure. Our quiet week in the wilderness had turned into something we'd never forget. The first light of dawn was creeping over the horizon when Mark and I finally saw the lights of town. We hadn't spoken much since leaving the cabin, each of us lost in our own thoughts, trying to make sense of what we'd seen. My hands were still shaking on the steering wheel, the adrenaline slowly ebbing away, leaving a cold, hollow feeling in its wake. We decided to wait until daylight to go back for our things. Neither of us said it, but the unspoken truth hung heavy between us. We were scared to go back in the dark. We found a motel on the outskirts of town, the neon sign buzzing a welcome that felt jarringly out of place. That night, sleep was a stranger. My dreams were haunted by glowing eyes and monstrous shadows. I kept waking up, expecting to find the creature looming over me. Mark seemed to fare no better, his face drawn and tired in the morning light. We attended a small church service that Sunday. Neither of us was particularly religious, but right then, we needed something to cling to, some semblance of normalcy. The sermon was about facing your fears, about the unknowns in life. I couldn't help but think about the irony. After the service, we drove back to the cabin. The daylight made everything seem less threatening, but the memory of that night was still fresh, casting a dark shadow over the beautiful landscape. We packed up quickly, not speaking much. The cabin felt different now, tainted by the terror of the previous night. On our way out, we stopped by the owner's place to drop off the keys. I hesitated, then decided to tell him about what we'd seen. His reaction was a mixture of skepticism and concern. He assured us he'd never heard of such a creature in these parts. But there was something in his eyes, a flicker of something unspoken, that made me wonder. The drive home was long and quiet. Mark and I talked a little about what we'd do next, but mostly, we were lost in our own thoughts. I kept replaying that night in my head, trying to make sense of it. Was it really a werewolf? Some undiscovered creature? Or just a trick of the light in an overactive imagination? I knew one thing for sure. The wilderness had changed for me. I used to find peace and solace in its solitude. Now it felt like a place of hidden dangers, of mysteries better left undiscovered. I made a silent vow to myself. Never again would I venture into the woods alone or unarmed. When we finally pulled into my driveway, it was almost a relief. The familiar sights of home, the sounds of the neighborhood, it was comforting. But even then, I couldn't shake the feeling that something had shifted inside me. That encounter at the cabin had changed something fundamental. I no longer viewed the world in quite the same way. The wilderness had always been a place of beauty and mystery. Now, it held a sense of foreboding, a reminder that there are things out there beyond our understanding, lurking in the shadows. I've always been the kind of guy who doesn't scare easy. Name's James, by the way. I'm 26, kind of buff, and I've seen stuff that would make most people run the other way. But me? I stand my ground. That's why what happened in Mount Pocono still sends shivers down my spine. I'll never forget it. It all started when I drove up to Jason's place. He's my buddy, known him for ages. His house in Mount Pocono isn't your typical mountain cabin. It's modern, with big glass windows and all the latest tech. Jason loves his gadgets almost as much as he loves his booze. That weekend was supposed to be like any other. We planned to drink, laugh, and maybe go ice fishing if we felt like braving the cold. But as soon as I stepped into his house, something felt off. I couldn't put my finger on it, but it was like a voice in the back of my mind whispering, "Be careful." I tried to shake it off as Jason handed me a shot. "To a great weekend," he toasted. Normally, I'd be downing shots with him, no questions asked. But that night, I hesitated. It was weird. I've never been the superstitious type, but there was this gnawing feeling in my gut, warning me to take it easy. "Everything okay, James?" Jason asked, noticing my hesitation. "Yeah, just not feeling 100%, I lied, forcing a smile. "Stomach's acting up." He laughed it off, but I could tell he was puzzled. Jason knows I'm not the type to back down from a drink. I excused myself to the bathroom, hoping to clear my head. The bathroom window looked out into the dense forest surrounding his house. It was pitch black out there, except for something that made my heart skip a beat. 2 glowing blood-red eyes staring back at me from the darkness. I froze. "What the?" I muttered under my breath, not believing what I was seeing. For a second, I thought it was some trick of the light, but those eyes, they felt alive, watching me. I backed away from the window, my heart pounding. I didn't tell Jason about it. He was already getting into the party spirit, and I didn't want to be the buzzkill. Plus, part of me wondered if I was just seeing things. But deep down, I knew it was real. The rest of the evening passed in a blur. I drank a bit, but my mind kept going back to those eyes. When Jason suggested we head out for ice fishing, I wasn't sure it was a good idea, but he was already grabbing his gear, excited to show me his latest fishing gadgets. "Come on, James, it'll be fun," he slurred, a little too drunk for my liking. I nodded, trying to seem enthusiastic, but inside I was on high alert. Something was out there in the woods, and I had a feeling it was watching us, waiting. As we stepped out into the cold night, I couldn't help but feel like we were walking into something we weren't prepared for. But I pushed those thoughts aside. After all, I was James. I don't scare easy, or so I thought. Loaded up with our fishing gear, Jason and I stepped into the chilly night air of Mount Poconos. I could see my breath forming little clouds in the freezing air, a stark reminder of how cold it was going to be out there on the ice. I had this heavy feeling in my gut, the kind that tells you something's not quite right. But I brushed it aside, figuring it was just nerves, or maybe the fact that Jason was a bit too tipsy for my liking. The woods around Jason's place were dense, the kind of dense that swallows sounds and makes everything feel closer than it actually is. As we trudged through the snow, the only sound was the crunch of our boots breaking the crisp white surface. I couldn't shake the feeling that we were being watched. It was so quiet, too quiet, like the forest was holding its breath. "Man, it's dead silent out here," I said, trying to make light of the eerie calm. Jason, fumbling with his fishing gear, just grunted in agreement. He was more focused on not tripping over his own feet. The deeper we got into the woods, the more I felt it, like eyes were on us, tracking every step we took. I kept glancing over my shoulder, half expecting to see something lurking in the shadows. But there was nothing, just the endless stretch of trees and darkness. We finally found a decent spot near a frozen pond, far enough from Jason's place to feel like we were in the middle of nowhere. Jason set up his fishing gear with clumsy hands, and I helped him drill a hole in the ice. All the while, I couldn't shake the feeling of unease. It was like something out there was just waiting for the right moment. "You sure you're okay, James?" Jason asked, noticing my distracted look. "Yeah, just not used to it being this quiet, you know," I replied, forcing a smile. We sat in silence for a while, fishing lines dangling in the icy water. Every snap of a twig, every rustle of leaves made me tense up. I kept telling myself it was just the wind or some small animal, but deep down, I knew it was more than that. It wasn't until Jason stumbled and fell, spilling his can of beer on the snow, that I realized how drunk he really was. He laughed it off, but I could tell he was struggling to keep it together. "Maybe we should head back, man," I suggested. "You're pretty wasted and it's freezing out here." Jason looked up at me, his eyes glassy from the alcohol. "Yeah, maybe you're right. Let's pack up." As we gathered our things, I had this sudden chill run down my spine. I turned around slowly, and there it was, the dog man, standing not 50 feet away from us. It was massive, easily over 10 feet tall, with those same blood-red eyes I'd seen earlier. It just stood there, watching us, its breath visible in the cold air. I felt frozen, not just from the cold, but from fear. I had never seen anything like it. It was like something out of a nightmare, but there it was, as real as the trees around us. Jason, too drunk to fully grasp the situation, mumbled something incoherent. I grabbed him by the arm, ready to run, but the creature didn't move. It just kept staring, its eyes locked on ours. In that moment, I knew we were in real danger, but I also knew we had to keep our cool. Panicking would only make things worse. So with every ounce of courage I could muster, I slowly backed away, keeping my eyes on the dogman. It didn't follow. It just stood there, a silent sentinel in the night. As we made our way back to the house, I couldn't help but feel like we had just escaped something truly terrifying. But the night wasn't over yet, and I had a feeling that whatever was out there in the woods wasn't done with us. Not by a long shot. We stumbled back towards the house, our fishing trip forgotten. Jason was drunk, but even in his state, I could tell he felt the gravity of what we'd just seen. The dogman, towering and mysterious, had left an unspoken fear hanging between us. I helped Jason along, his steps unsteady and slow. My mind raced, trying to make sense of what we had encountered. The creature was unlike anything I'd ever seen, and believe me, I've seen some strange stuff given my family's background in witchcraft and the occult, but this was different. It was real and right there in front of us. As we trudged through the snow, I couldn't help but keep looking back. The forest was silent again, but it felt like a deceptive calm. Every shadow seemed to move, every whisper of wind sounded like a growl. I was on edge, my senses heightened to every little sound and movement. "James, what was that thing?" Jason slurred, breaking the silence. "I don't know, Jay. I really don't," I replied, my voice barely above a whisper. The encounter with the dogman was not just a moment of fear. It felt like a moment of truth. There I was, a guy who never scared easy, faced with something that shook me to my core. It was a creature out of legends, something you hear about in scary stories but never expect to see with your own eyes. As we neared the house, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were being followed. It was like the creature was watching us, ensuring we left its territory. My mind raced with questions. What did it want? Why didn't it attack? Was it just curious, or was there something more? We finally reached the safety of the house, the warmth inside a stark contrast to the cold dread that had filled us outside. Jason collapsed on the couch, still trying to process what had happened. I sat down across from him, my mind a whirlwind of thoughts. The dogman had been intimidating, sure, but there was something else in its eyes, a sort of understanding, maybe even a kinship. It was as if the creature and I shared something in common. Was it the curse my family carried? The loneliness that seemed to follow me? Or was it something else? Something deeper? I spent the rest of the night awake, staring out the window into the dark forest. The encounter had changed something in me. I had always believed in the supernatural, but facing it in such a tangible form was different. It made me question my own place in this world, the nature of the unseen, and the mysteries that lie hidden in the shadows. The dogman was more than just a creature. It was a symbol of the unknown, a reminder that there are things out there beyond our understanding. And as I sat there, looking into the darkness, I couldn't help but wonder if our paths would cross again. But for now, all I could do was wait and watch, the memory of those glowing red eyes forever etched in my mind. The weeks following our encounter with the dogman were tough. I couldn't shake off the image of those piercing red eyes and the heavy air of silence that followed us back from the woods. It wasn't just a story or a fleeting moment. It was a haunting experience that lingered in my thoughts day and night. But the hardest blow came 6 months later. Jason, my good friend and like a brother to me, passed away. It was unexpected, a freak accident that left everyone who knew him reeling in shock. For me, it was more than just losing a friend. It felt like a part of the curse my family always talked about, the curse of loneliness that seemed to follow me around. Jason's death left a void in my life. We had shared so much, including that last fateful adventure into the woods. I often wondered if that night had somehow foretold this loss. The encounter with the dogman, the fear, the unspoken understanding, it all seemed to weave into the tapestry of my destiny, a destiny marked by solitude and the supernatural. I found myself withdrawing more, my interactions with others becoming sparse and strained. The encounter in the woods had changed me, made me more introspective, and wary of the world around me. I was more attuned to the strange and unexplainable, a byproduct of my family's legacy and that night's encounter. Nights were the hardest. I'd lie awake, staring into the darkness, half expecting those red eyes to appear at my window. But they never did. The dogman was a creature of the forest, a sentinel of the unknown that had crossed our path for reasons I couldn't fathom. I spent a lot of time thinking about the creature. What was it? A guardian of nature, a spiritual being, or just a creature misunderstood and shrouded in mystery? I felt a strange connection to it, a kinship born out of our shared moment of silent confrontation. It was as if we both carried burdens too heavy to explain. It with its physical form and primal essence, and me with my family's curse and the resulting loneliness. The world seemed different now. The lines between the natural and the supernatural blurred, revealing a world that was much larger and more mysterious than I had ever imagined. My experience with the Dogman was a gateway to this realization, a harsh but necessary awakening to the complexities of existence. In the end, I found a certain solace in my solitude. It gave me time to reflect, to understand the deeper connections between all living things, and the mysteries that bind us. My encounter with the Dogman wasn't just a story of fear and survival. It was a story of understanding and acceptance. So here I am, living each day with a newfound respect for the unknown. I've learned to embrace my family's legacy, to accept the loneliness as part of who I am. And as for the Dogman, it remains a pivotal chapter in my life, a reminder that there are things out there beyond our understanding, waiting in the shadows, watching and existing in a realm that occasionally, just occasionally, intersects with our own. Seven years ago, my wife and I made a life-altering decision. We purchased a property that stretched across 11 acres of dense woods in a remote corner of northeastern Minnesota. Our land was nestled among vast expanses of fields and forests, totaling roughly 160 acres. While the area wasn't densely populated, a fairly busy state highway ran nearby. Housing developments dotted the landscape, but they were several miles away. Our immediate surroundings were a picturesque blend of farmland, woods, and rivers, a place that felt both isolated and enchanting. I should clarify that, up until that point, I had never believed in the supernatural. I had never feared the wilderness or the great outdoors. Of course, I maintained a healthy sense of caution and respect for the region's potentially dangerous wildlife, including giant bears, moose, wolves, and other formidable creatures. In fact, I was an avid hunter and mountaineer, and I had spent countless nights in the wild, encountering and navigating through various perilous situations. Fear had never been my constant companion. But all of that was about to change after just a few weeks of settling into our new home. The house and land we had purchased had been abandoned for years due to foreclosure. Restoring it to its former glory was no small feat, and the local wildlife had grown accustomed to the absence of humans. Black bears frequently sauntered through our yard at night, and other woodland creatures regarded the area as their own private highway. We even stumbled upon scattered animal bones strewn throughout the woods, evidence of the abundant coyote population. It was during one fateful night, amidst a rainstorm, that I had my first unnerving encounter. Concerned about a broken downspout that could potentially flood our basement, I ventured outside around 10 p.m., equipped with a headlamp. Behind our house lay a relatively large, swampy area that acted as a natural divide between the woods. As I fiddled with the downspout, my back to the swamp, an inexplicable feeling of dread washed over me. It wasn't the ordinary sensation of being watched. It was something deeper, more visceral. I forced myself to stay calm and slowly turned to shine my headlamp toward the swamp. What I saw sent shivers down my spine and shattered my disbelief in the supernatural. Countless pairs of glowing, reflective eyes stared back at me. These were not the eyes of ordinary animals like deer or raccoons. They varied in height, and when I aimed my light where they should have been, there was nothing but weeds and trees. Even when I turned off my headlamp, those eerie eyes continued to glow, as if illuminated by an unseen light source. They remained motionless, transfixed on me. Panic engulfed me, and I sprinted back into the safety of our home, convincing myself that it was just deer or raccoons. Later that summer, while sitting on our screened-in porch that partially faced the swamp and woods to the east, I was startled by a peculiar commotion. It was around 11 p.m., and the sounds I heard resembled a fierce battle between a bear and a cow. There was a small farm southwest of our property, and I assumed a cow had strayed into the woods, becoming prey for a bear. It wasn't a scenario I'd ever encountered, but it seemed plausible based on the unsettling sounds I heard, a bear's roar followed by frantic cow mooing. This disturbing symphony persisted for over an hour, etching a horrifying memory in my mind. What chilled me even more was that the same unsettling sequence of sounds occurred again the following summer. However, I never ventured into the woods to investigate, as that area didn't belong to us. A couple of years later, an opportunity arose for me to purchase the adjacent 70 acres to the west, which included more woods, tilled fields, lumber, and ponds. During my exploration of this new property, I ventured deep into the woods, where I had previously heard those disturbing sounds. This area was consistently bizarre, and each hike revealed something odd. Once, my son and I stumbled upon an old game snare tied to a tree, its surface marred with dried blood. On another occasion, we encountered a century-old tree whose trunk was entirely ensnared by a barbed wire fence, weaving in and out at various intervals. There were tree trunks adorned with deep scratches and claw marks, unlike anything resembling an antler rub or typical bear markings. These findings were unsettling, but I dismissed them as the quirks of nature, perhaps the work of an unusually large bear. Dead animal bones were a common sight, and even during the winter, I discovered a couple of deer legs, snapped and stripped clean. My sons frequently found animal skulls in this enigmatic area. In my efforts to prepare for deer hunting seasons, I installed tree stands and trail cameras in various locations, including the hilly woods where I had heard the eerie sounds years before. Strangely, unlike my other cameras, this one never captured any images. No animals, no movement, nothing at all. My son also hunted in that spot and noted an unusual stillness in the forest. He attributed it to a lack of insects or other natural sounds. However, sporadically, the forest would come alive again, as if something was entering and leaving the area. He even mentioned hearing strange footsteps on occasion. One day, a few years ago, my son ventured into the woods while I was engaged in forest management activities. He thought he spotted me moving quickly through the trees, but soon realized that the figure's clothing bore no resemblance to mine. This person, or thing, appeared to have tunnel vision, walking in a straight line without noticing my son's presence. The sighting made no sense, as the direction this figure was headed led only to deep ravines and an uncrossable river. Despite an extensive search, I found no trace of the intruder. They had either disappeared or been picked up by a road, a perplexing mystery. Around the same time, my son and his friend embarked on a late afternoon walk in the woods. As dusk descended, they noticed a figure in the trees, near one of the hills in that forested area. It began to approach them as they called out in greeting. However, this entity remained silent and continued its advance, Sensing something amiss, the boys fled back to the house, recounting their encounter with a tall figure, possibly 10 to 15 feet in height, with skinny arms, dark hairy skin, and peculiar ears reminiscent of a German shepherd. It was emaciated, elongated, and its appearance was so unsettling that they initially mistook it for an animal. In my role as a protective father, I decided to investigate further, worried that it might be a trespasser or something more sinister. I followed the path they indicated, given that it was winter and the ground was covered in snow. However, when I reached the spot where they had seen the figure, there were no tracks, no signs, nothing to indicate any recent presence. It was as if the intruder had left no trace, prompting me to believe that my son and his friend had either fabricated the encounter or experienced a shared hallucination. Despite my skepticism, both my son and his friend remained adamant about what they had seen, their fear undeniable. Even my wife, who had her own unsettling experiences, refused to venture into that part of the woods anymore. All these inexplicable events and eerie occurrences seemed to converge in one specific area of our property. I find myself at a complete loss, unable to decipher their meaning or connect the dots. The strangeness of it all prevents me from discussing it with anyone I know in the area. I continue my investigations, but the mysteries persist. In my quest for answers, I conducted internet research, and the term Dogman surfaced as a potential explanation. However, the circumstances of these encounters do not neatly align with this classification, leaving me bewildered and seeking resolution. The swampy area near our property holds secrets that elude understanding, and I remain determined to uncover the truth, no matter how bizarre or unsettling it may be.